Vegas lights shine bright, bad boys sitting pretty. Michael, Steve, Rob running things in Sin City. Podcast blazing truth, rhyming hard and witty. Three kings on the mic, Vegas life gets gritty. Matt Michaels dropping bombs, quick wit, no filter. Sin City's own, blending gold with the silver. Steve taking notes, every word's a thriller. Rob's on the tracks, beats cold like a chiller. Bad boys a podcast, raw truth they broadcast. Speaking facts so fast, haters coming dead last. Las Vegas legends, three amigos top class. Mic in hand. Setting fire, never outclassed.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels, Sin City Steve, and apparently the John Cena of the show, Rob Bossolari, on the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. You can't see him, which actually helps probably the viewership of the show go up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this week we had a crown jewel down in Perth, Australia.
Perth.
We
certainly did. Hey, it got a better grade than WrestlePalooza.
Yeah, it got to be. This is from ESPN, a show that stumbled out of the gate with a relatively tame street fight and a far too brief fight between women's champions, was rescued by an absolute stellar match between Cena and Styles that put an excellent bookend to their rivalry. Rollins finally getting his comeuppance against Rhodes by any means necessary, and the women's tag match were both strong and anchored by memorable bounce back for WWE after middling WrestlePalooza. And that Cena Styles match was something that was pretty just wonderful in terms of tributes and the way it was put together by them. This is what Cena had Alicia Taylor read for the introduction of AJ Styles. Ladies and gentlemen, the definition of total nonstop action, the ace and undisputed boss of Bullet Club. It's our honor as fans and my honor as an opponent to see if he can beat up John Cena one final time. He is the face that runs the place, the phenomenal AJ Styles. And then, of course, when Cena did the Sister Abigail, all the fireflies lit up, which was a pretty...
You got the whole world in your hands. You got the whole wide world.
It was brilliant.
Absolutely. You know, the thing that really stood out to me, and, you know, we'll talk about the, you know, all the callbacks and all that kind of stuff. But you mentioned the fireflies with and John reacting to them. I think that it's John is such a good actor that he's usually almost always in the zone and completely immersed himself. But he showed a bit of, you know, a bit of emotion that sure was clearly unscripted immediately after he noticed that the arena had, you know, all thrown up the fireflies. It was a really, really touching thing to watch. Honestly, it was great. It was genuinely great in every sense of the word. And especially since what 80% of the arena were rocking those yellow John Cena shirts. That was crazy. Yeah.
And Rob, speaking of touching yourself while watching,
There was a leaky explosion downstairs, so we had to rush down and find that the water heater exploded.
Well, I just wondered what you thought about the finish.
Well, I finished many times, as did they. No, it was like watching New Japan Pro Wrestling, because you have finish after finish after finish. New Japan Pro Wrestling is very spot-oriented and very finish-oriented, where they can string together a lot of moves. I actually took notes on this, believe it or not. I did some homework, and my memory is never that good. But, I mean, we saw they called Cena doing a Walls of Jericho. They didn't call it. You know, they called it a Walls of Jericho, yep. Sister Abigail. We had a Randy Orton DDT. He had them doing the voices where you can hear the voices in his head. And then AJ does the RKO attitude adjustment. I mean, this is incredible. And then you have Wade Barrett going, this is like when you make a character in a video game and you give him everyone's finishing moves. That was great. A choke slam, and then we get the call for a 619, and he goes to set it up, which was so fucking funny. And then we get a sweet chin music. Yeah. This is quintessential wrestling for fans. Yeah. This was fan service.
It was all fan service, but it was a great fan service at that. I think that both of those guys, you know, I think that the standard was set pretty high, you know, given the gravitas of just what John Cena and AJ Styles can do, what they've done in the ring with each other in the past. But I think that this match exceeded any and all expectations that I had personally. And from the commentary online, it feels like as if that was the same talking points across the board.
No, I might be reading into this, but I think the final two finishers that Cena put on AJ, which was the tombstone piledriver to the attitude adjustment, the match by which AJ Styles was supposed to be buried by The Undertaker, he was very strategic in what moves he went to and what order he used them. So very, very cinematic and intentional.
Absolutely. It had to be. Also on that show, we had Stephanie become the crown jewel of the women's,
La Primavera.
I mean, is there anyone better than her right now?
Ring right now, still to me, Io Sky. Right now, out of the women, Io Sky seems the most versatile. I think Stephanie Vaquer is deserving. She's running the high, which is deserved, and WWE was smart to pull the trigger and not wait a year and a half after she cools down with fans and then go, oh, you're... They did it the right way, and that was smart.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you bring up a great point with Io. Far and away, she is the best wrestler. I'll say it, the best wrestler. Full stop, whether it's men or women in WWE. I think that, you know, Io is a very special talent. For them to, you know, put the rocket on Stephanie and, you know, make her the focal point of their women's division, the way that they have in the last year is pretty telling. It goes to show what you can do to build a star from now. Granted, she did have name recognition from other promotions and things like that. But all that stuff aside, I think that what they've done is they have solidified a definite star in the women's division for years to come. In Stephanie Vaquer, and it's great that they are recognizing this stuff. And Rob, you hit the nail right on the head. Sometimes they're a bit slow on the uptake, or they don't really kind of crown, no pun intended, the people that they're trying to, you know, get over if they're over with the fans first. But I think that this is a great timeline that we're in with WWE and Stephanie Vaquer for sure.
I also think that with Tiffany Stratton, outside of having the belt on her, there's not much more you can do with her right now.
She needs some character development. She needs some character development for sure.
She got a lot of pop off her feud with Charlotte Flair, and then it kind of dried up. And even then, she took the wrong kind of heat. She took heat backstage with management for the insults, and it has not paid dividends in the long run. And the other one...
God forbid that she, I don't know, holds a title for fucking 15 months, whatever.
No, I'm not saying that right now. I wouldn't put it on anybody else. Because as much as you guys were clamoring for Julia, Stephanie Vaquer is much better than Julia, I think, overall. She'll develop, she'll gain mic skills, they'll do what they can with Spanish to English. But I like her, and she does not need a valet. She doesn't need a tag team partner, Stephanie Vaquer. She can go in on her own, and impress people.
Right. She's not Asian. To think about it. No, you just said it. Io Sky is the best wrestler. Well, why is she not, you know, the highlight of everything? It's because she can't speak English and you'd have to have her with the valet and et cetera, et cetera.
But what they've done is they've gone half and half with her because they had her with.
Well, that's because she's Italian and Japanese.
No, I'm talking about Io. I know you're making a pun. I'm talking about Io because Io, they used her with the Kabuki Warriors. They used her with Rhea Ripley, but she was entertaining on her own, and she has just enough a command of English to be bubbly and poppy and communicate enough that she connects with the crowd. She can be solo Io Sky. I think she can be a solo star. She doesn't need to do too much more than she already has. I think she's more verbose than Asuka ever was at that.
Wow. Well, we'll let Asuka know that when we run into her. That's nice, Rob.
And then she's going to look at me and go, "I'm gonna be you know what I'm
Bloomist in your face, and it's going to be like you're part of the Blue Man Group. You're already freaking shaved down for it. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go.
Hey, speaking of ready to go,
40 an hour.
This man right here wasn't ready to go as he took an ass beating in the street fight there, Roman Reigns, especially from his own cousin. Wow. I mean, and then, you know, we moved to the next night where, you know, you have Seth, who is your champion of Crown Jewel, the men's champion. And
Sherlock Holmes.
Look at these guys. Oh, turning on him. You know, look at that fortuitous 2014 to 2025. The callback of the turn of the shield. And it says WWE reportedly made significant changes to their plans of Seth Rollins due to injury at Crown Jewel. It's noted Bron Breakker was not originally scheduled to turn on Rollins until sometime at 26, but things sped up because of the injury in Australia. And we're not too sure what the timeline is for Rollins with that injury. So that's something
good.
The thing was, were not subtle about it. There were two times when they did a change where the staff, or I mean, the performers were not that subtle. When they broke up the New Day, that entire day, you could see Big E was crying. He was trying to hold back tears. And they were cutting promos like it was just another day. And then at the end, you find out that Big E gets drafted to Raw and the other two stay on SmackDown. And the whole day is like, oh, he's like mopey. And you're like, oh, I know what's going on now. This time, the entire day, you had Bron Breakker. He was like, yo, I'm pissed. Oh, he's going to brag again. What do I have? What do I? We know what it's going to be. Hey, you just got two belts. What do I have since I joined you? Not a goddamn thing. Yeah. If they do this right, you have Rollins relinquish the belt. You give it to Bron Breakker. Paul Heyman just maintains. Bron Breakker could cut some promos.
Give the belt to people, though. What the?
No, big guy. No, he has to earn it. A gauntlet match. It's something.
Do a fucking tournament. Do a tournament. With the shoulder injury to Seth Rollins, according to numerous sources, it's going to keep him sidelined for several months. So realistically, they have to make some sort of a major move for that championship. Honestly, at this point, vacate the championship, give my boy vacant yet another title run, and just create a tournament, and have that be you can even dedicate a PLE to it, or a themed episode of Raw or SmackDown, something. But build up the fact that essentially you're pressing a reset button when at the end of the day, Rob, you said it. The one who should win this tournament is Bron Breakker.
Absolutely.
So that way, when Rollins comes back, now you've got Braun with that title and Seth comes back for the title that he never lost. So, I mean, the shit writes itself, but also where does CM Punk fall in on all of this? Some people would say, oh, CM Punk should win the tournament so that he becomes the champion, whatever it is. It's, you got a lot of moving pieces for sure.
Yep. You have the same, you keep it everything as it is. You keep the vision, they're not going to call themselves that, but you keep the vision as it is in the sense that, all right, now Bron Breakker has his own bodyguard. He has his own heavy. He has his own guy to come and take bullets for him while he dishes out, you know, spear after spear after spear. And then Paul Heyman, it's an easy transition for Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman can just go, hey, this is where the money is. This is where the future is. We're pulling the trigger early. My guy was weak. It's unfortunate. Here's the belt. H, Mr. Levesque. Mr. Levesque, Paul, may I say, I think that that would be a great time to give my guy, Bron Breakker. And then you just move from there. And he, you know, and that's. And then he says, Bron Breakker. And that's it. Or, and I don't want them to do this because he's fucking stale as hell, but you put Brock Lesnar in the mix because they were teasing that. And
You can have whoever wins that tournament to face Brock in the finals. And, you know, that gives them, you know, a statement win over somebody like a Brock Lesnar.
Or you go real deep on this.
I see this.
You give Bron Breakker Raw. You have Brock Lesnar come and beat the shit out of Cody on SmackDown. Heyman gets both brands. They've already broken the kayfabe of there's different brands because they, you know, the vision had been back and forth every week. Jimmy Uso showed up on Raw just because they didn't. He's there now. So you could do that.
Well, yeah. So put the belt on Cena. Have him be the last real champion.
The 18 time. All right, I gotta go, kids. Peacemaker episode to film.
Bro, that'd be hilarious if they actually did something like that.
Yeah, and then just have him drop it to Gunther on his last match. And,
why not? Why fucking not? Then we're back to where we were.
Nothing has changed. It is 2024 all over again.
What the fuck? He's not Japanese, dude.
That's Japanese,
like,
to you?
That was like your fucking Mikey fucking Speedball Bailey impression from Gunther.
I'd have to show my gums for that one. Anything? Kowtow a few dozen times. You know, I'll come dressed up like a Mighty Morphin Power Ranger if I'm going to do Speedball.
All right. So then we had TNA Bound for Glory, which
look at that.
Good
room
for them, man. So
look
good
at
for
that
them
room.
And, so good for that. Kevin Martin says, beyond proud of this team and what accomplished last night. 7,794 packed into the building. Part of history with us. The resurgence is real. Resurgent. Look at, oh, little Spike Dudley.
Well, hold on now. I want to jump in here and say, this is like watching AEW, except they don't have to stop panning the camera up.
And here you go, the boots handed over in the ring by the Dudleys to the Hardys, big hugs, Mike Santana.
That's what I'm talking about.
Bleeding on his child.
They did the right thing, man. Matches. They did the right thing. They had Santana go over Trick, which is what they should have done. So, yeah, their biggest show of the year, you have Mike Santana, who arguably is going to be the face of TNA going forward, and rightfully so. The dude has drastically reinvented himself and is leaps and bounds ahead of where he has been and where he was in AEW, you know, strictly confined to being a tag guy. Now he can carry TNA.
He was in AEW.
Stop. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, he can carry that mantle. And Yeah.
And he's in the heart of his career. I mean, yes.
He's in his prime.
His best years to date were with LAX, but when you really get past it, he is a solo competitor. He has a compelling story. He has good mic skills.
Absolutely.
He can sell to audiences, and that's all you need. That's really all you need. He has the skill. He has the mic ability.
He can go in the ring, too. He can go in the ring.
Of course.
Which exactly. Obviously, you know, all of the fluff aside, you know, it's good to have the steak, but if you don't have the sizzle, then you're not marketable. But if you're selling all sizzle and you got no steak, then people are going to leave
with
hungry.
With TNA, and won't come back. I want to jump in and give TNA a compliment. With TNA, at any point when they give them the belt, can you think of a TNA World Heavyweight Champion in recent memory that did not have the in-ring ability? I think they usually find somebody who can go above and beyond in TNA.
I think people would argue Joe Hendry. In terms of in-ring ability, I think you would find a lot of...
I mean, I could see that.
He's not terrible.
It's kind of picking nits, honestly, like, you know, he doesn't have to go out and be a Will Ospreay or, you know, any of the, like, S-tier in-ring workers. Because he brings that personality to it, and you can play up that aspect of his character. Absolutely.
He is a Hulk Hogan type. He's doing simpler moves, perhaps, but he puts intensity behind them. He has his own version of a choke slam. I mean, he has.
Your exact question was in-ring ability, and I know just from looking at some of the marks out there, they do not feel that Joe Hendry is a fucking wrestler. They feel that he is a personality and that when he goes to WWE, it's just going to get stale. They won't know what to do with him, et cetera, all that shit. So
he's made for WWE though.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Genuinely, like he's made for WWE.
Of course.
I want to see him wrestling LA Knight as soon as possible. I would love to see that feud, the feud of egos, of catchphrases, of styles. It would be absolutely perfect.
No. Styles will not be involved. He might even be retired by then.
All right.
They had a great event. Speaking of NXT, we got some releases, including Wes Lee, which was probably the biggest name on this list here of people who got released.
It was rid of
a bloodline member.
It was either him or Stevie Turner.
Genitalia.
Well, I mean,
what? That's practically the name.
Well, he's going to go right back to being on TNA with the Rascals. That's a no-brainer.
That needs to happen.
That's all that you need to do. You have the four of them show up there, done, bing, bang, boom. A good wrestler, great in-ring ability. They'll make up automatically. They'll probably do a storyline where he's got a fight to prove himself and blah, blah, blah. Done. Yeah. Done. You'll see him in 6 months from now. You won't even think about it.
Yeah, well, I'm barely thinking about it 3 days from the release. So. Hey, look at this, though. Speaking of NXT, breaking news. NXT destroys AEW Tuesday Night War. NXT average viewers, 625,000. The 18 to 49 was 0.12. And Dynamite average viewers, 321,000. And 18 to 49, 0.07.
Why are they doing Tuesday again? Is it because of baseball?
No, it was because of hockey opening night.
Yeah.
Which is the last of the big four sports leagues that TNT has the broadcast deal with.
There are Wednesday night program and people are lazy as fuck, even though you have TVR. People are, you know, and, you know, DirecTV and digital. People are lazy. It's not. Wait a minute. Oh, I don't want to watch it now.
And okay, realistically, though, to be honest, that Tuesday, that lineup did not serve them well at all. Mm-hmm. They didn't do shit to promote it. But you know, you can't change the numbers. Numbers don't lie, as I've said numerous times on the show. So props to NXT for, you know, taking the night as they should. It goes without saying CW Network is broadcast TV. TNT is on cable and it's a different night. But the thing is, even though NXT had those advantages, they still had the better show. Like if you watch both of those shows in a vacuum, realistically speaking, the NXT show was better than Dynamite was on that same night.
But I'm now
that puts it all into perspective.
Right, I'm now getting sucked in. I'm a mark. I'm being sucked into wanting to see the TNA guys on NXT. Sure. And and it's another notch for me to go want to watch NXT, because now it's an extension of TNA, whereas AEW is in a canister and it's just one little. We know what it's going to be.
But AEW, it was a homecoming. It was a homecoming. And you had this huge reveal of Lacey Lane taking on Mercedes Moné. I mean, how did they not do ratings with this?
Who? Oh, she was that Lacey tag chick. Lane. She was like, she was a tag champion and for the women for like 10 minutes.
Yep.
And then they, Caden Carter, and they couldn't figure out anything to do with her. And she came, then she came up with like flamethrowers or a bubble machine, or I don't know. They tried all stupid gimmicks to put her over, and none of it landed. None of it landed.
No. And it just, again, like, who fucking cares? I mean, that was the big reveal of the mystery opponent was like, I mean, and it's not like, the diehard AEW fans watch WWE product, right? Those are the ones who really don't. So
they might not watch NXT, and really, Caden Carter was NXT. She was in the main roster for such a short window. Yeah.
No, I'm saying they probably don't even watch NXT, and you have her show up in Florida, which is the home base, but now you're in Jacksonville, not Atlanta. It just, I don't know.
It was like the same thing when they brought out Madison Rayne and she's walking down the ramp.
No reaction.
And she is TNA royalty and blah, blah, blah. And she came in the most uninspiring ring attire. She didn't want to be there. It looked like she was like,
and bro, keep in mind, they did that shit in her hometown.
They did that shit in her hometown, and
she got no reaction. They did it in Columbus.
They did that for Deonna Purrazzo. It worked, and then it never worked again. And she was even worse than that. I mean, she is at this juncture in her career. She's the trainer behind stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's look at this here. Sean Ross Sapp said, Wrestling Economics published a new report starting with the stating the actual attendance for AEW All-In came in at 2379. Number includes 21,973 spectators, which reflects the number of tickets scanned for people who actually entered the venue. So AEW loses hundreds of thousands of dollars thanks to failed ticket sales. AEW's massive All-In event, Global Life Field, was supposed to deliver in more ways than one. But the turnstiles didn't spin like expected. The state of Texas made sure to slash its end of the deal. This, again, was according to WrestleNomics. They were originally approved to receive $1 million in funding from the Texas Event Trust Fund, a state-run reimbursement program for large-scale attractions. That estimate was based on a projected 33,490 total of attendees, including 32,500 paid fans. But once the official numbers came in, things got a lot less generous. The actual turnstile count, 21,973, with a total headcount of 23,759, includes suite guests, staff, production workers. Once the reality hit, AEW's expected payout got chopped down by nearly a third. Arlington City Manager Trey Yelverton confirmed the outcome. AEW will instead receive around $700,000 in reimbursements. That $300,000 shortfall isn't just about numbers. It's a direct hit to AEW's wallet for an event President Tony Khan had publicly billed as nearly 25,000 in attendance and nearly 3 million at the gate, while tracking site WrestleTix estimated around 27,245 distributed tickets. The state wasn't buying into the hype once the receipts were tallied. There were also bigger plans pitched for All In Week, including crossover shows with New Japan and CMLL, and a concert featuring Fozzy and Swerve Strickland, but none of those materialized, possibly weakening the justification for the original state funding. And then finally, this kind of deal isn't new. WWE pulled from the same trust fund for WrestleMania and other big events, but AEW's attempt to cash in came up short once the state saw the actual turnout. They might have delivered a show fans enjoyed, but when it came to dollars and cents, Texas wasn't feeling generous. Should AEW rethink the strategy for state-funded events, or did the state overplay its hand on the reimbursement cut? I think out of all this, the one thing it shows is that if you do go in with the state, the one thing that you do then have to do is actually have numbers come out that you are now accountable for, and you can't just make shit up.
They oversold a bit for Wembley, came up short. Following year came up shorter. Texas was supposed to be, okay, we're going to stay within our means and have numbers that are more reasonable. Didn't hit those numbers even. You have to build up a desire to see this pay-per-view. This has to be your WrestleMania, and you are not hyping it up. You wait till a month out to really build up the matches. The card is weak every time. There's no one's fault. The first All In was amazing. The first All In was like some like ground level thing, and it was something we haven't seen in a while, and it was a bunch of people coming together. You're not going to get that excitement again. So what do? You have a year to build the excitement. You're selling tickets before we know or have any idea what the payoff's going to be. We knew that it was going to be WrestleMania 40, Cody Rhodes is getting involved. We knew WrestleMania 39, what it was going to be. And we knew the satellite matches around that were forming as the year progressed with the other things like WrestleMania. WrestleMania is always led into by Royal Rumble. You cannot have Royal Rumble without SummerSlam, and you go back at each one of those major pay-per-views, leads and feeds the other one. AEW does not have that, and they do have good, strong pay-per-views, at least by name, that they've been consistent with, but they're not using them correctly. So this is an easy fix. It's writing, okay? If your roster is injured all the time, that's a different scenario. But they're not. They're making it start to finish, except for Pac. The rest of them show up to work every week. So there ain't no fucking excuses. Unless you're getting your 9 feet of your colon ripped out or your POC, write some better shit.
I think the thing that Tony fell into, and I'm not a fan of it, to say the least, but the AEW employs the same type of booking mentality as New Japan Pro Wrestling. New Japan will not book multiple shows at one time. So essentially, if you know the biggest show of the year for New Japan is always, you know, it's always Wrestle Kingdom. Okay. If they have pay-per-view events leading up to Wrestle Kingdom, they won't book matches outside of the main world championship match while there are other cards that are outstanding leading up to that main pay-per-view. So I think that, you know, Tony is using New Japan's booking and Ghetto's booking style as a template, it seems, for AEW. And I don't think that that works. We've had 6 years to see if that would work for an American audience, and it does not work. You can cite whatever metrics that you want, but at the end of the day, your TV viewership is declining. Your live event gate attendance is declining, and it's it's all or most due to promotion and a lack of promotion. And we've all made mention of it on this show. You mentioned it just now, Rob, that if AEW doesn't actually book that and put it on the pedestal as being their version of a WrestleMania or, you know, their once a year super show, whatever verbiage that you want to use, if they don't treat that show like a big deal, no one else will. It'll just be another.
But I don't want Tony Khan telling me it's a great show. No, I want the wrestlers in their script,
the writing, to go,
hey, we are going to, I'm going to see you at All In. I'm going to beat you at All In. It's January. Why are we talking about All In? It's August and it's just ended. We are going to fight all the way. What does WWE do? As soon as WrestleMania ended, what do? They talked about where it was going to be next. It's going to be in New Orleans. It's going to be the greatest thing ever. No, wait, it's going to be at Vegas.
You're missing the biggest point of this, and that is very simple. Tony Khan does not understand that his fan base is only 500,000. Right? That's the problem. The problem is that he's not trying to attract a larger fan base. He's perfectly content with the brainwashing around him that is telling him that this is, you guys are so fucking good, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's the problem. The problem is that he just assumed he'd draw 30,000 with not having to put that extra in because of the fact that all he promotes towards is the fan base that's already there. And the only extra fan base he promotes towards is the commercials that they show on the network that airs them, right? So right. It's already the network that you have people watching. And so, or like he did at WrestleMania, you put up some stuff at a fucking bus stop and it's like,
why not do that though? Like, why not do that in addition to other shit?
Whoa, dude, not at WrestleMania. Do it at, no, because the fans who are here for WrestleMania, most likely already aware of, they're wrestling fans. What you should be doing is making sure that those bus stops are plastered all over Arlington. Right? That's the key here.
What we're saying is it's all of the above. You have to do everything.
Yeah, it's everything. And they're not doing half.
WWE treats, if you've ever worked in retail, WWE treats their business like a retail job where they're constantly reaffirming catchphrases and they do it all the fucking time. Tony Khan is approaching it like, I am a purist wrestling fan and this is what I would love to absolutely see. We always said he books by tapes like they used to do in the 80s and 90s.
He books for the sickos, bro. And that's all that he books for.
And you're not going to make money that way. That's why, in essence, Paul Heyman is where he is and not running ECW to this day, because that only gets you so far. If his agreements are such that at 300,000 people every other week and then 5 and 7 on good weeks, that 700K is enough to keep you in TBS land, then he'll keep doing it. But if you got to now pay $300,000 and you got to start paying people back, I mean, are you digging into the Jacksonville Jaguars wallet now? Where's the money coming from? Is it coming from Shad?
Keep in mind, they did just sign that TV deal. And I know I'm not trying to overhype that, but I think that one thing that is getting lost in the sauce, yes, we're saying a lot of very negative things about AEW, but let's be real. They are the second most profitable wrestling company in the world. At the end of the day, for all of their faults, they are still the second most profitable company, wrestling company in the world. So that has to be at least thrown out there and at least mentioned. I doubt that they're going to be going anywhere, but they need to make some wholesale changes extremely quickly.
When you're talking about the UFC business model, though, Tyler, it's not the UFC business model. That's been the WWE way of doing things for a long time. Vince had some terrible bookings, but the way he frames the importance of pay-per-views, I don't think that's ever changed. They had a very corporate idea of it a long time ago. They've had a very corporate idea about this a long, long time ago.
Yeah, well, on the AEW front, Ibushi injured again at Collision. And unfortunately, 2 years to get back into the ring. Holy shit. Broken femur.
It's the biggest bone in your body, man. Like,
yeah.
It was a complete break.
If it was John Cena, he'd be back in 3 months.
Fuck. And you know,
he was back in 1 week when they put his nose to the other side of his face.
Just to put this into perspective, I don't know how, and this is a callback to what we were mentioning, but when Ali took that ridiculous spill off the top rope and landed on one leg, I don't know how he didn't snap something in his leg. Yet you have Ibushi, who realistically, like if you go and you watch the match, yes, it looks bad, but if you showed me both clips and said one of these guys is going to break his femur after this spot, I would have said that it would have been the Ali spot. So it was very unlucky set of circumstances for Ibushi. We can only wish him the best in his recovery. But yeah, man, 2 years is no joke.
The guy from Top Flight, his ankle was dangling off his foot, and he was back in a year.
Keep in mind, though, dude, Dante Martin, when that happened, he was what, 22 maybe?
I thought it was 19.
Whatever. Ibushi's 40.
Ooh.
So, I mean, honestly, this could be a wrap for him. Realistically, this could
when
be
I
a wrap.
When I was 12,
for him.
My next door neighbor had a 10-foot rock wall.
Wow. Whoa. We don't want to hear about that.
Hold on. I'm saying me and my buddy used to run off that thing and jump 10 feet to the ground and be fine. I looked at that when I visited my hometown and I looked at that wall. I said, I ain't going to do that now. I don't even know what the fuck I was thinking. I would probably snap my leg if I tried to do it now. I can only imagine your bones get more brittle with time. And yeah, would he be able to come back at the same intensity? Ugh, I don't know. I mean, we're talking about abdominal surgery and Kenny Omega is slower. Kenny Omega is a lot slower. Your core and your legs for all your movement and your core for all the follow through. If one of those things don't work, you're screwed.
Yeah. Well, thankfully he wasn't a huge part of AEW anyway. So it's like a mid-carder is lost. Oh, well, speaking of, Darby Allin said the cancer got cut out and they got rid of egotistical people. And that's why the locker room is so much better. On this front, it's been almost 2 years. Not one single negative incident has occurred backstage with this man. he evidently fits in perfectly into the modern day locker room. The era of locker room cancer, Phil, is gone. So how funny is that?
So here's something that people don't get is Darby was actually pretty tight with Phil. He wasn't talking about CM Punk as being a locker room cancer. Realistically, you had guys that refused to work with other people and put people over. So I know that we've thrown out names on this show of people that, you know, creatively they couldn't come up with anything for because they refused to do jobs. And now we are seeing comments from Darby Allin, of all people, who is, you know, like it or not, I mean, he's the heart of AEW at this point. And, if you look at the episode of Dynamite from Wednesday, it was that's never been more apparent. That's never been more apparent. So
do we really have to?
I mean, I already know that you don't want to. I mean, you're already going to look at the shit and, you know, with an upturned nose and a sneer. I already know that shit.
Yeah, but I look at everything like that.
Everything that's not WWE, yeah.
Hell when Matt no, is upbeat about something, WWE. I'm scared. When Matt's happy about something, I'm like, wait, is
yeah, true. Happy? What's wrong? What's right. going wait, to
hold
happen?
Hold on now.
Something's uneasy. Yeah.
The first exactly. words Matt ever said to me was, what are you, a fucking AEW mark? And I'm like, this is what I expected. This is what DJ told me he was going to say to me.
Yep. Seems legit.
Speaking of things that turn my nose up at, Take a Shitta has climbed the mountain. He took a Shitta on Zack Sabre Jr. to become the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion.
So a Japanese guy went to an old Japanese promotion who was running a British world champion, and he became the world champion.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I think that obviously this plays in, because now at this point, if they choose to fucking do this, which they certainly should, January 5th is going to be a co-promoted show with AEW New Japan Pro Wrestling. You could easily run Takeshita versus Okada and put both belts up, and the winner takes all, the AEW Unified Championship and the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. And you could use that to crown Takeshita as, you know, the second biggest name in AEW, if you choose to go that route.
Are we assuming, or, you know,
I guess they could just throw the other title on Okada too.
Are we assuming that Don Callis is going to screw over Takeshita?
Takeshita, if you
we saw Wednesday when Okada hit the remote and oops, I hit the wrong button.
Which was a pretty cool callback, by the way. But you know, that Don Callis family segment was very interesting. It planted seeds. I think that we are going to see a breakup and Takeshita leaving the Don Callis family at WrestleDream, and more than likely, you know, costing his team the match. It just depends on who's going to get that title shot at Okada. Is it going to be Bandido or is it going to be Brody King?
Well, speaking of leaving the Don Callis family, Santos Escobar took one glimpse of this from AEW Dynamite last night, realized what his fate would be, and ran right back to WWE.
Oh, that's right. I'm an idiot. I forgot. That's clone. Oh, Jesus Christ.
You know, that Santos went back to WWE apparently. Now we got. We got this going up with, that guy.
Remember, I asked you about that last week. Yep. I said, "How the hell is that guy on TV? Right. Isn't he within the 90-day?" And you said, "No.
Because he wasn't." And the holdup right now with Andrade is TKO's new contracts have a clause where if you're fired or for cause or breach, then it's a 1-year non-compete. The older contracts were said to have this, but now it's standard. Okay, that's what they say here. I just love this because, again, it's Meltzer and Alvarez double talking. So WWE reportedly issues a letter to AEW after Andrade breaks 90-day non-compete clause. This is before the news of, you know, it being a year possible. Quote, here's what I heard. I don't know what's going on with Andrade, but I was told that he's not hurt. He didn't get himself fired. Apparently something is up involving his WWE non-compete. I was given the impression it could be something that could be resolved quickly, or it could be something that might not be resolved for a while. This is why I love these guys. So it could be something, or it couldn't be something.
I don't know.
But it's something related
this
to
is Seinfeld now. Could be something, George. This could be something.
When he was fired, we remember we were told WWE didn't care, and that's what Brian said. And then Meltzer chimed in. This is what I've been hearing: was WWE sent a letter to AEW? Obviously, didn't know. AEW obviously believed that there was no non-compete. there were people who talked to people in WWE who also believed that there was a no non-compete. But WWE, apparently, you know, that's the story that they said he can't do them for 90 days. Whatever the hell that sentence ever means, Dave. Okay.
So he shows up 90, he'll show up 2.5 months from now and screw somebody over for the Don Callis family.
Yeah, basically.
No, not 2.5 months. A year? Yes.
No, wait, that's the thing that
Fox part won't hold up. That part won't hold up in a court.
If it's in the contract, it will. Because remember, he got fired again. It wasn't release.
Correct.
It was fired for cause. So,
yep.
But we'll see if they even fight it.
That is a terrible contract, by the way. If for any reason we don't like horrendous. You, we're going to block you from doing your job anywhere else.
Again, it's not I don't like you. It's for cause.
It's for cause, but
which means that Andrade probably got popped for the drugs that was, you know, being the issue was so. Again, this is a TKO thing. This probably goes to the UFC. And, you know, guys probably there get the same contract. Okay, here's the big updates. Andrade is signed to AEW. There appears to be no bad blood there. There's still plans to use him when he's available. He had to pull from additional bookings as a result. WWE people were shocked by this news. We cannot confirm he's not being paid despite reports. This did affect immediate creative plans, as did Ibushi's injury. Andrade could certainly fight it, and if extended for a year, he would and certainly win. Should win, we think. A number of people have indicated to Fightful Select that Andrade has a very good lawyer, but didn't specify he was fighting it. During the AEW Wrestle Dream media call, Tony Khan was asked about the situation pertaining to Andrade. Tony said he has a ton of respect for Andrade. He left AEW in 2023 on a high note and is excited for what is next for him. So he avoided the question. That's where he wanted to leave it. So again, the truth of the matter is that it's new. It's something if they've had in contracts before, they've never had to invoke it. Which also means, what the fuck did this guy do to piss enough people off to go, you know what? Fuck you.
Charlotte Flair made a call and said, take care of business. Block this prick. I don't know. When they want to disappear a wrestler, WWE has been disappearing Latino wrestlers left and right. They disappeared Alberto El Patron. They disappeared, you know, this guy. I don't know. It's odd that you're going to evoke a one-year non-compete clause. If you want to get rid of this guy and you call up the other company and say, hey, he didn't pass a drug screening, and they're going to go, we want him anyway. Okay, then. What does TKO have to do? And I get you could say, yes, it's in the clause. I would argue as his lawyer, if you're telling me there's a standard 90-day non-compete clause, I get that. You're telling me a year? Now, that's you placing an arbitrary rule on my company. My company's going to tell you to go to hell. I'm going to put him there. What, are you going to sue me for not putting him in? I'm as rich as you are. I've got billions. You've got billions. Don't be petty about this. Oh, we'll fucking duke it out. It'll be a stalemate, and I'm going to put him on TV anyway. There's nothing you could really do about that. Because if they want to go to bat for him, if they have him as an integral part of the storyline, well, fuck you, TKO. I'll give you your 90 days, and then after that, you can eat a dick because you're not going to fuck up my storyline. You're not going to fuck up my creative.
Can we just be real about this? This just goes to show that they have no fucking idea what they're doing in their front office.
Well, that's true. And here's the thing. For all intents and purposes, is he going to be missed in any storyline? They've got a logjam of people in Don Callis' family.
You're not talking about the fucking storylines. Go ahead, Steve.
So what I was going to say is this, to be honest, if you look at everything since his release, So Andrade actually became the heavyweight champion for the Lucha promotion, The Crash, on October 3rd. So keep in mind, a one-year non-compete is applicable to all promotions, not just AEW.
Right.
So, so by him wrestling that match, winning that championship, realistically, if we remove the branding AEW and WWE, one guy, let's say Drew McIntyre or Sheamus or somebody else, they leave WWE and they, you know, they go somewhere else, they win a championship, then obviously you're going to be more likely to assume that they're not going to have a non-compete because they got booked and won a championship for another promotion.
Yeah.
So realistically speaking, I don't necessarily think that it's the fault of the AEW front office. I think that the verbiage in those contracts is leaves a lot to be desired. I don't think that the one-year non-compete will hold up in court. So I think what's going to happen is you'll see some sort of a settlement, and it probably will end up being a 90-day no-compete that gets observed. As a result of all of this, he just won't have the year non-compete.
Can we go back to the statement you made earlier? They're the second largest wrestling company.
Yeah.
That's the point. The point is that, hey, he went to Mexico and won the belt. Okay, that's fine. No one's looking at the contracts there. And if he went into fucking FSW and won the fucking title there, no one would be looking at the contracts there until eventually someone in the WWE office went, wait a minute, this guy's not supposed to be wrestling. How come he's fucking doing this, right? It would eventually got caught up. This is the second largest company. He shows up on a national television show. And all of a sudden, they're like, wait a minute, does he not have this? And they look and they go, no, he's not supposed to be on your show. How the fuck did their lawyers not fucking read the fucking contract he had over there? And why wouldn't you read his contract if you're privy to it? You would should be, you know, there should be something.
But here's the question. Let's assume they did. Let's assume they did, and there was, like Steve said, vague language in there. Very, very, you know. I mean, I you know, I've seen when I was renting an apartment once, I had very vague contract. And then the finer details didn't come out until the shit hits the fan, and I'm going, hey, the power company's turning my lights off. Why? It said in my contract, in my renter's agreement, utilities. Well, utilities didn't mean anything because it was a vague one size fits all contract. Right,
because Rob, you're an individual who doesn't have legal experience.
No. But again, I mean,
full of attorneys, they probably would have said, "Hey, buddy, this is what's going on," just to let you know.
And I get the guy's going to want to work and take every opportunity given to him. You would imagine. Somebody would have said to him, hey, fucko, you won't be on the camera for a year, you know, because now you're making it sound like this guy is trying to sneak in under the radar and get on, you know, Turner Broadcasting. I'm like, yeah, you would kind of know also, though, I would imagine if you were told, hey, you've got a year where you can't do anything, that's going to be in the back of your mind. I'm sure he's got an agent there, too, who's probably told him you're screwed. You would imagine at this juncture that this guy has to have an agent representing him.
You would assume.
Possibly. I mean, not all.
Assume.
These
yeah. That's why I said assume. He is talented enough now, and he's been on enough main stages that at this juncture, especially when you're hopping companies, you know, you would want a legal and talent, and you want an agent. You want somebody out there protecting your best interest. And if they're saying, hey, we're going to get you a promote, we're going to book you in a Latin American, hey, we're here, you're a champion now. Okay, then.
Well, okay. You know, that brings up a good point. I mean, who better than to talk to than someone who really tries to protect the best interest of all people of Hispanic heritage? Oh, Mr. Wait. President, pontificate.
My fellow Americans. Now, you were expecting Donald Trump. And I think that I am more qualified
to comment on these matters because I haven't had failed lawsuits after failed lawsuit after failed lawsuit. I haven't been indicted 34 times for hooking up with a skank. I am a clean American president. And when we talk about a contract negotiation, no one has conducted better deals for the American people than myself, Barack Hussein Obama. And when it comes to Mr. Andrade, Senor Andrade, we want you to know that we will be looking into this. My personal lawyers will be looking into this to make sure that ICE do not come knocking at your door. Because what this really is a pretext for having you get deported. And we're going to make certain that we can do everything in our power to see that Donald Trump keeps his hands off you. And don't fret. We know that you had, you know, beautiful blonde hair, blue-eyed wife. And that kept you safe for some years. But whether or not you stay married to a white woman or you go back to your baby mama Esmeralda, we will make certain that you always have a seat at the table in the United States of America. And that is the American way. Whether or not you're black or brown, white or yellow, you will all have a chance to sit at the table because that is what patriotism is all about. Now, to my two Caucasian associates over here, you both know that with so many wonderful years of wrestling, that he would have to be pissing motor oil to pass, or I should say to fail a wellness checkup. And last I checked, his wife was a flayer. So we know that he ain't beating her up easily. This is outright racism. And we will make sure that Andrade is present at the Super Bowl halftime show. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, the over-under for AEW this week, Steve.
Yes. And just to button up that last segment, if there's anybody who would know anything about deportations, it would be Barack Hussein Obama. Whoever saw more deportations in his time in office than Donald Trump has. So, nonetheless, if anybody's...
Did you just make a case for bringing him back for a third term?
Hey, if that's what y'all want, then have fun with that. But I'm just saying, there's nobody who knows as much about deportations.
We deported more white people than any other president in American history, and when back in office.
Gee, I wonder why. Anyway,
we will be deporting more blonde-haired, blue-eyed people than ever before seen. God bless. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Barry. Appreciate you. Anyway, over-under for this week, AEW presents Wrestle Dream on Saturday. Yes, it's another Saturday pay-per-view. The bane of my existence. Anyway, 12 matches on the show, 4 matches on the pre-show. You know what it is. And I do have to say this. If you don't watch any of the go-home show from Dynamite this past Wednesday, go seek out the vignette with Moxley and Darby. It looks like they're having a conversation through, you know, the prison glass with each other. You got the big sheet of bulletproof glass between them. The cinematography, it was solid. And I know a lot of people love to talk shit about AEW, their production gaffes, things that they're not doing right. But we have to mention when they are doing things well. And just the way that they shot this, with obviously looking over Darby's shoulder, you got Moxley's face in the foreground, but you're also, because it's the glass, you're also seeing Darby's face as an inset and reaction between the two. It was probably one of the best things that AEW has ever shot, to be dead honest. So seek that out. It did get me more hyped for the I Quit match. But anyway, just had to at least mention that. Realistically, Saturday's Wrestle Dream show is going to be like every other AEW pay-per-view. Your over under for this show is over 4.5 hours. In the show itself, we all know AEW, it's almost a trope that they can't do a pay-per-view in under 5 hours. This will be no exception, but your over is set at 4.5 hours.
All right, time to take a quick little social media dump here. First off, former WWE, ECW, WCW star Raven diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's disease. Thoughts are with him. This young fan had to get a CT scan, and she faced it wearing a Penta mask. She was scared, but remembered Penta's slogan, zero fear. Just a really cute little story, and good for her to get through that. Raja Jackson faces one felony charge of battery resulting in a serious bodily injury, as well as a misdemeanor battery charge related to the incident involving Psycho Stew. This week was Eddie Guerrero's birthday, as well as Dusty Rhodes' birthday. Little throwback here to Shawn Michaels, who made his professional wrestling debut.
Oh my God! Look at the Luke Skywalker hair.
Yeah, buddy.
1984. This past week, he lost to Art Cruz in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
What's during music that- television?
And RIP Music Television, which is coming to an end as of an announcement this week. So lots of things going on in that picture. Speaking about things going on in that picture, look at Chelsea Green in 2010. 15 years makes a little bit of a difference, doesn't it?
Just a little bit.
Oh, my God. Well, some stuff stayed the same.
That's right, man. That hair. Mm. LBJ says
sounds about right.
Agreed that WWE officials should be in the Hall of Fame. What do we say?
Absolutely, yeah. Fucking agreed. They're the third man or woman in every match. They deserve it.
You gotta have Charles Robinson. You have to have who did the screw job? Who was that wrestler? Earl Hebner. Earl Hebner and Charles Robinson, their names leap off the page.
Oh yeah.
And if you ever did it for AEW down the road, Aubrey Edwards, her name leaps off the page too. And
even people like Mike Chioda, you know, absolutely, bro. Like referees need to get their day in the sun, honestly.
Don't forget, the past referees too, like Tim White,
who's
no longer around, and Joey Morella. Pee Wee Anderson as well. Oh, what was that?
I heard Morella, so I thought it was the director of authority, Santino Morella. You son of my bitch.
No. So Joey Morella is the son of Gorilla Monsoon.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the head referee in the biggest years of the 80s boom there. The referee in the Andre versus Hogan in WrestleMania 3. And he died in a car wreck in 1993, I believe it was. So there you go. John Cena reportedly unhappy with WWE retirement and wants to go to AEW. Vince Russo reported on Sportskeeda. Well, bro, I've got to tell you, okay, I'm hearing that John Cena is very unhappy. He doesn't like the way this whole retirement angle has played out. It's not what he wanted. He's disappointed. I've even heard that there's been some contact between John Cena's camp and AEW's camp. Whoa, with that being said, Gunther's going over John Cena. Oh my God.
Hold on. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh man, yeah. Hey Tony.
Dude, I'll say this, man. If it would be the funniest shit ever if they did do some sort of a cross promotion with Peacemaker And he just happened to stroll his ass out there on AEW Dynamite.
Oh.
Not necessarily as John Cena, but as Peacemaker.
Peacemaker.
And be in character the entire time. Sign me up.
The only thing I'll say about that is John Cena is the only superhero or the only actor playing as a superhero that actually looks like a superhero and not a guy in a rubber foam muscle suit. Like, Cena looks like shit out of somebody. He looks like the way they're drawing him.
No shit, dude.
Looks like an Alex Ross cover.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be Captain America. I think he would do so good at that. If they ever reboot it, please, somebody make him Captain America.
Yeah, once again, Rob, half of you should be mad at yourself because the new Captain America, and yeah, apparently you're a racist. I hate to say it, buddy.
Well, that's why I said reboot it, you know. It's, you know, he was there. He got in there. He's the Kofi Kingston of the Captain Americas. You know, and now it's time for Brock Lesnar to come in.
All right. Well, let's pay tribute to our tribal chief down under.
Jeez.
Kangaroos, no. And this, just for no reason, this someone AI'd. A horse on top of the ring. Dude. And I think
WWE AI is just so fucking great.
Yeah.
So fucking great.
Hey, WWE, was Mark safe from Ridge Holland injuring people today?
So is everyone else.
Yes.
Goodbye, will they ever make one for Nia Jax?
Once she's fired. The Hardys putting the NXT Tag Team Championships on their mantle there. Which I believe was AI generated. Oh, look at there. Speaking of winning a championship, Steve Macklin getting his international title back with his mom.
That's
there.
Awesome.
Double fingers to everyone. Hey, y'all excited for the Bullet Bloodline Club?
Jeez.
Oh, God.
Bret Hart once painted this for Jim the Anvil Neidhart as a gift. It's naked Jim the Anvil Neidhart doing push-ups on a plate.
What the fuck, good, dude?
That's good. It's like a looks like some guy, looks like a cartoon character. I love it.
That's fucking nightmare fuel, dude.
And on the back of it, Brett put a rare glimpse of Jim Anvil Neidhart doing a naked push-up.
Well, you know, you don't see the junk, so he didn't animate junk, so it's hard to tell. But
well, probably with Jim, that belly hangs so low, you couldn't see the junk. So
okay,
the mega bungholes collide. look at this throwback to the old WCW promotions for their merchandise.
Christ, the reeks of the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah,
and Arn still looks 50 years old there, and he's got to be what, in his 20s?
Yeah, he was 22.
Jesus Christ!
The fuck, man!
And his son was born with a fucking receding hairline.
and Ric Flair was 64 in that picture. So that's amazing how the extreme is there. All right, so. Sting and Flair are on the Mount Rushmore here of WCW. All right, who are the two others you put? Quickly.
Oh, shit.
Quickly.
Sting and Flair, I would say Goldberg and DDP.
Okay, Rob?
Goldberg and Nash.
Okay. The only correct answers are Goldberg and Hogan.
Oh, yeah, well... Yeah,
you can't short sell Hogan.
I get Hogan. The reason why I snapped to those two names so fast is because those guys are and always will be WCW guys. I will always view Hogan as a WWF, WWE guy. So just as I see Flair as a WCW guy, I always will. I will always see Sting as a WCW guy. Same for DDP, same for Goldberg.
To me, Flair's tenure anywhere else wasn't as long. And you could even say NWA if you don't want to see WCW.
Right. So the only reason Hogan makes it is for this. Very simple. There is no DDP. There is no Goldberg if Hogan never goes there in 94.
Completely.
There's no WCW in 95.
Yeah.
If Hogan doesn't go there.
So my brain went to Nash because he got there first. I could not. I mean, Goldberg is an obvious one. Once you said Goldberg, I have nowhere to go. I have to include Goldberg. Yeah. And for some
DDP,
reason.
And DDP makes a lot of sense. There'd be no argument. So you could also argue Lex Luger, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there are your things, but there you go. All right. Rob, go ahead and read this as Big Papa Pump.
All right, hold on a second. So let me break it down to you. For all you dummies that don't understand what just happened, you take Seth Rollins, the so-called visionary, and you put him in a ring with Braun Breaker, a genetic freak. But what Seth didn't calculate was the betrayal quotient. Now let's do the math. Seth thought that he had 100% chance of survival with Braun at his side. But what he didn't know is that Braun's got 66 2/3% loyalty. When you factor in the family bloodlines, and the other 33 1/3% is pure rage. So now Seth's sitting there going, why? I'll tell you why. Because Braun Breaker's not here to play backup. He's here to take over. He's the dog-faced destroyer. And now the leash is off. So Seth, you took your eye off the math, and you had 141 2/3% chance of getting betrayed, and now you're just another statistic and this Steiner equation of pain.
There we go. Very good.
Did I do that justice? Glad.
Yes, and I'm so glad that man exists in our world. All right, the LFG contestant, BJ Ray, was released by WWE, and on X, Ray was calling himself a ratings machine and encouraged Tony Khan to give him a call, telling the AEW president, your boy is ready. If you watch LFG, this guy is a complete fucking moron and can't wrestle worth shit. AEW fans enjoying wrestling, picture of wrestling there and them enjoying it. WWE fans enjoying wrestling, a picture of a ratings chart.
Yep.
All right. This from the October 7th edition of Dynamite, Ice Fears Hangman. The sign was confiscated during the broadcast. Will Nightingale wearing a shirt that was very low cut, and someone said this top is going in the rafters. Whereas Willow replied, y'all acting like you'd never seen a little bit of titty before. This is to say I'm amused, guys. I actually, for once in my life, laughed at something Willow said.
Dude, her body transformation, she's put in a lot of work. A lot of work. So yeah. Props to her, man. Absolutely. Up
with Mandy Rose. So, you know.
Well, so here we go. Quick, Charlotte or Mandy?
Mandy.
Okay, Steve?
Mandy all damn day.
All right, hands down. It's all Mandy on this panel. Okay, Nikita Lyons or Stephanie?
Stephanie.
Ooh, Nick Carr.
Yeah. Wow, that's a tough one. I kind of dig in Nikita Lyons.
Okay, I go with Stephanie as well. So 2-1, Rob, you lose. Next one, Liv Morgan or Tiffany Stratton?
Stratton looks hotter. And I've seen that picture of her when she had no makeup. And it was like, holy shit, she looks hotter without the makeup.
Yeah. Yeah. I would actually. So if we're going strictly off of looks, Tiffany, if we're going off of total package, including like attitude and everything, Liv.
Liv looks like she got bit by a vampire.
She's probably into that shit.
Okay. So obviously you. No,
fuck it. Fuck it, Tiffany. Yeah.
Tiffany. Yeah, so you two go Tiffany, I go Liv, so I lose that one. All right, Jade Cargill or Tiffany Stratton?
Rob?
Well, now Jade Cargill has two gashes, so Jade.
Yeah, the question is, which one are you fucking? Her lower gash or her upper gash? Jesus.
Well, they sew them both up, you know. Shit.
I didn't say the shitter. I said the gashes. All right, so you're going Jade. Steve, who are you going?
I'm going Tiffany. Yeah.
Tiffany time, baby. I'm going Tiffany as well. All right, Rob, you lose that one. And finally, Mandy Rose versus Chelsea Green.
What do I lose? I didn't want sloppy seconds anyway. Chelsea Green or Mandy Rose? Yeah, Mandy Rose.
Yeah, I'll go Chelsea Green.
Okay, well, that's good because they're trying to have a kid, and she put it on hold because of her WWE career. So, Steve, maybe you can make a baby for her and Matt. That's nice. I go for Mandy Rose as well. So, Steve, you lose that one. Okay, well, this picture here of Rhea Ripley and
Bianca. Wait a minute. Why are we asking this one? When you got to this one, you didn't give us options anymore.
No. Someone said that these two, Bianca and Rhea, someone said they look like a lesbian couple looking to adopt their first child together, and I can't unsee it. Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Speaking about can't unsee it, when Ricky Starks was laid out and Ava was bent over helping him, Ricky is looking somewhere.
Ricky's thinking Arby's.
He's going to get his ass kicked by The Rock.
Yes. Well, that's all he's seeing is the face of The Rock just looking at him. He's looking at the Brahma Bull. Hey, look, it's Mercedes Moné, or the more accurate photo.
Oh. Hey, those belts were important to those local regional wrestling companies.
I'm sure they were. Pro wrestling is not gay. Also pro wrestling.
It was a perfect fit.
And finally, fit like a glove. This young man here grew up to be this guy.
What the? Wow. Jesus Christ. Oh my God, I got a promotion.
Look at that. That's fucking perfect.
Oh my God.
That's fucking perfect. That's why
I shave. So I don't look like that.
Oh, shit. Okay, speaking of Rob, what do you got going on?
On the 27th, there is going to be a comedy contest at the Bonfire off Naples Avenue. I think it's 610 Naples Avenue. Oh, you got the – look at that. Brilliant. I will also have a show on the 25th. Which I will have that posted on my site at Vegas Trump Guy. So visit me at Vegas Trump Guy. I will have a show on the 25th as well, Rooftop Comedy. And I think I might have one other show in the mix that I'm forgetting about, but we had a great show last night at Tequila Little Time. And it was promoted by Chris Spring and Liliana Cervantes and one of my guys, Lex Las Vegas, from the Vegas Four Horsemen of Comedy, will be there at the Friday night edition at their new location. So go check out Lex Las Vegas Comedy or Four Horsemen Comedy to find out times and location.
All right, Steve.
All right. Hey, thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, a very special thank you to all the brave men and women serving this country. Whether you're doing it on lands, foreign or domestic, thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, REPPsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, and general energy needs. Again, repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout and save yourself 10%.
There you go.
PP.
All right.
PP.
That brings us to the time where we say,
oh, no.
Good night.
Did any of you have a great time tonight?
Yeah. With that, everybody, thank you for hanging out. We will we'll do it all again next week. Till then, happy wrestling.
Rolling up the strip under neon lights. Podcast mic is glowing in the desert night. Matt and Michael's leading with the swagger tight. Sin City Steve right by his side. All right. Rob Butcher, Larry, dropping truths, no fear. Broadcasting stories, make it loud and clear from the Fremont.
edges to the Bellagio sphere. These bad boys rule, let me make that clear. Vegas bad boys tearing up the scene.
To Matt Michaels and the Vegas Boys of Podcasting, this is John Cena saying thank you so much.